Vibe
Machine.
Hi there, Josh Kiff here, and I host this podcast series, Undercovers. This is part two in our series with Alex Howdy, the designer behind some of the most iconic albums on the Def Jam Records label, and much more. Episode one found us hearing about Alex's journey to Def Jam and his first project, Freeway, and then working on LL Cool J's Exit 13. If you get a second, please like and subscribe to this podcast, as we have a lot more albums and artists coming up that will be dropping every few days. We're about to continue the conversation and move to Rihanna, where we chat about Alex's involvement with two of her most iconic albums ever.
Vibe
Machine.
You were an art director for her albums R-Rated and Loud, arguably two of her biggest albums, especially at the time they were huge. And she, as we said before we hit record, she was one of the biggest artists, if not the biggest artist on the planet at the time. I'm going to go out and assume that she has a large camp and everyone in her camp has an opinion.
Yeah.
And the only reason I say that is because I've listened to other people talk about big pop stars, and there's always a lot of, you know, there's a lot of managers, there's a lot of handlers, there's a lot of people, and they all seem to know art and want to know or believe that they know art intrinsically.
Yes. Sure.
So I thought without second guessing, Alex, I'm going to ask that question. Not that the album art isn't amazing, and I love how they're so different. They've both got her face on them, but you know, one's this.
Well, if you go through my discography, there's a lot of faces, and I will tell you that is a byproduct of working in-house. So if you want yes. to not put faces on every album, literally, it's funny, LL Cool J was probably the last one I did for a real long span without having faces on the cover. And that was definitely a trying part of working in-house, especially for executives who worked there who shall not be named at the time. They had a real thing for eye contact pictures. That was like a real
right.
I mean, legit thing. Like rule. It was crazy.
That's crazy.
Because we had some cool ideas, but
yeah. But R-rated, you know, even not putting Rihanna's name on either of those albums.
I didn't
do
the cover of that.
You didn't do the cover. So
no, I only did the interiors.
You did the interiors. Amazing. So yes. Was that sort of part of your learning experience, getting to work on someone?
Yeah. It was intense.
Like doing, yeah, I could imagine.
It was cool and intense. It was a good opportunity. I was very excited when they asked me to do it, for sure. You know, in retrospect, it's like, it's hard to even like take credit for a project where you didn't really work on the cover. But, I did all the inside stuff, which was very cool, and I learned a lot, and the type is laid, probably not as good as I would lay it now, but you live and you learn. And I got to work under my art director at the time, you know, was very, very passionate and very demanding on making sure things looked great, and it was a ton of work, and I definitely helped my work ethic and pushing that, and it's cool to be a part of. You know, a huge record. I mean, it was gigantic,
definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
So it was nice, when Rude Boy comes on at the club. I was still going to for some reason. It was cool. You know, I'd be like, I worked on this, man. It's pretty cool. I don't know.
Yeah, very cool. And then and then Loud, which obviously was, you know, a step up again.
Loud, I love that cover. That I did the cover, but you know, it's one of those things where Rihanna's team is huge, as you said. She is her own creative director for sure, which is fucking rad. Like, it's very cool. She's very hands-on, and all the best projects come from the artist's idea. Like, I used to hate when bands were like, I don't know what I want the cover to be. Like, dude, remember when you were 13 and you wanted to be an artist? Like, you didn't dream of what your cover would look like? Like,
covers,
what?
Yeah.
And like, you should have a bad idea and then make me make it good. You know what I mean?
Good.
Like, that's my favorite situation. And but this is not that situation, for the record. She just picked, you know, she did this amazing photo shoot with Camila Akrins. And she's like super legit, crazy, big time fashion. It was like when Rihanna kind of stepped up her game and like got, I think, really, really went into the fashion kind of.
Well, it has that, it has that high end fashion world, and you know, a little bit of titillation, a little bit of nudity, you know,
yes,
high end photography
for sure.
As well.
That was interesting. That was a stressful photo shoot to have access to.
I can imagine.
For sure. I mean, God forbid anything leaked, it would have been a nightmare. So I was, you know, definitely paranoid about that and learned early about, you know, privacy and stuff. And, but yeah, so I knew it, the picture was so good. I was like, why are we putting type on this? And then I was like, can we at least get away with not putting her name on the cover? Can we put it in the inside of the spine? And that we got away with that, and we got to use the R from the last album, which, I know my boss at the time was really excited about, and I just wanted it to be super dainty and like, and minimal. Yes. But I wanted it to be custom still. So what I think I just like, I got this image, and there was only so much you could really move the crop because it was such a close crop picture anyways. So it was kind of like, I don't know, like I can't really like take a bunch of credit for it, but that was kind of my idea. It's like, how do we make loud kind of soft, like this beautiful soft image? And like the loudness should come from her face and like lips and like how in your face she is. And it was just like, you know, I was just, you know, thinking about her situation and like, it's all about her being her out front to me. I believe it was right after all that stuff went down and she was kind of like her comeback album. And I just felt like it was like, just let the, and not that I had a time. I mean, if I fought differently, no one, someone would have told me quickly, but, I just like let her be the star. And like, so what I think I even like, I took a narrow font or a light font and even condensed it even more. Like I selected and made it smaller and even thinner. So it was like as thin as I possibly could.
It's almost not there, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
it's
right.
Almost not there. And, the focal
and like
point,
again
and the
with the
thing.
Dichotomy of that with the name Loud, I thought was kind of like this like fashiony minimal loud is kind
perfect.
Of funny. I don't know.
It's perfect. Yeah. And the cropping, I love cropping. The one thing I've learned about this, and I talk about it on almost every episode, is cropping. I should just be some weird, I'm not even artistic, but I just want to do cropping. That's all I seem to be. That's my thing. And the thing that I love is focal point. So when you look at that album, I'm looking at it right now. I don't even see the word loud. It doesn't even come into my periphery.
Right.
I just see the lips. I see the nose. I see the eyelashes. I see the hair, which has had some, you know, some work done digitally to it. But you don't see the word loud. That is the secondary thing that you see. And that's what's amazing about it. That's what makes a truly great album cover. And I always say it, if you can frame that and stick that on your wall and it looks like a piece of art, you've achieved your purpose.
Right.
And
I mean, well,
that
was
that
the, that's kind of the goal. And you know, I've got to say the inside, I feel like I was young and I like wanted to put my stamp on stuff so badly that I think some of the stuff also, I think at the time it was just like, if you didn't like do anything, I don't know. I feel like I never could pull off that, like, just let the picture be the picture thing. You know what I mean? Like, I always, like, if I did that, people would, like, I would get called out for being, like, lazy. Like, legit. Like, if I just, and then when they would hire freelance artists, they could just do a crop of the photo. Like, half the time, they wouldn't even retouch it. And I'd be like, how do they get to get away with untreated, regular photos? I never wanted to waste the real estate anyways. But, like, everything is, like, has some texture over it and blah, blah, you know, just learning. Things.
Yeah,
but I'm glad that cover did not get that treatment, and it is just like a straight up like beautiful portrait.
Oh, it's stunning and well done, and well done on such a young part of your career, being able to work on something like that, and you know, being able to work on the cover of something so iconic. And I guess that leads to the next thing, which, based on what you've explained so far, you would have basically wet your pants when the Woo Massacre project came along.
Yeah. I basically did. And that was like a crazy... So, that was crazy. I mean, that was like, well, dude, it was a dream. I mean, that's a dream.
Yeah.
I could never talk about it any other way. It's
and
literally
for those
my three favorite members of Wu-Tang.
I was going to say, for those who don't know, it's Method Man, Ghostface Killah, and Raekwon doing a collaborative album of such called Wu Massacre. Obviously, the three biggest items out of the Wu-Tang Clan. And you worked with comic book artist Chris Barcello.
Yep. Who was on one of my favorite comic book artists growing up when I was under that table. And that's not true. He was a little after the under the table era. But it was a dream. I hit him up and I hit up another artist who I don't know if I should really talk about who didn't get the job. But there was another artist who I wanted to do it, who it just wasn't the right fit. It needed to feel more comic booky, and like most of the comic book artists I like are really painterly. It just would have started to feel more like an illustration, I think, than a comic book illustration, specifically comic book illustration.
Being able to do a comic book idea with the Wu-Tang Clan, amazing. Being able to work with that logo, amazing. That, to me, just being able to work on the Wu-Tang, put something with the Wu-Tang Clan logo, that would have been enough.
Dude, you have no idea. I mean, it was literally that's like part of the reason why I felt like that's a project I list when I moved out from music. I was like, this is a pinnacle for me. And it didn't sell a ton, and it's only 35 minutes, but it's good. At least it's like good 35 minutes. And it got a ton of love. Like the covers and stuff got a ton of love.
Oh, amazing.
It was all because, so I don't know if you know, but we did, like, it's not showing on All Music, but we did three different variant covers.
Which are on alexhowdy.com. Alexhowdy.com, everyone, has three.
I have a company now too, which the website is coming for that. So we'll talk about that later. You can cut this out. But, Pawn Creative is my new,
there you go. Pawncreative.com, everyone.
And, at Pawn Creative on Instagram. But, but that's probably where what'll be live. My website's been under construction for like 3 years. As many people have told you, I'm sure it's really hard to be a self-promoter when you are so busy promoting other people.
Yes.
I love this album
cover. I love the fact that you've got the three variants and then you've got them mashed together as well for a single cover.
Right.
And I think it is brilliant.
It just makes no sense why they let me do any of it. So
talk to me about it. How did it come about? Was it a project that they'd been working on and they sort of came to Def Jam and said, well, we've got this? And how did it all happen?
I heard that they were doing it and it was supposed to be called Shaolin Monks. And we used to play this game back in the days of Na Right. I don't know if you know about Na Right. It was like a huge hip hop blog. Shout out Na Right. SK, I believe. Nation, I think, was the other dude. And they used to post all the hip hop news. So it got leaked that this album was coming out, and we used to have a race. And it was like, if you asked to work on the project first, unless there's like a specific person the creative director wanted to put on it, then you kind of just got dibs. So like the second I read about it, I emailed my boss and I was like, I want to work on this. I want to work on this. And then I sent it. And I think that's like how I got it. I think they just were like, no one else cared as much as me, probably. And I had known nothing about the project, and I was just, this was my dream project. It was literally my three favorite Wu-Tang rappers, and Wu-Tang's probably my favorite, and easily my favorite rap group. But, you know, between Wu-Tang and Outkast, and I don't know if you got a preview of my other work, I got Outkast in the book too. Kind of. Half of Outkast. but, you know, it was just like my dream. And so they put me on the project, and so basically I was like, all right, when are we doing the photo shoot? And they gave me the budget for like a full photo shoot, and that we used to like would put together photographers and stuff to shoot stuff. And then they were like, well, I mean, watching the Wu-Tang documentary that just came out, did you watch that?
Not yet.
You should check it out. It wasn't that mind blowing for me because I'm a huge nerd, so I knew like a lot of the stuff that was going on, but it did give me a little insight to like, they had their moments where things were rough and they weren't getting along. And RZA's brother particularly is very, very controlling over the Wu-Tang brand, and they get into that in the documentary a ton. He admits it himself. So it was just a hard one, and I don't know how they even signed the deal. I think the deal might have been like put together kind of through Ghostface or something. I'm speaking out of turn. Sorry. But, no, that's okay. It wasn't you know, obviously it's just the three of them. It wasn't like the deal was just iffy, and it was a lot of material that had already been kind of produced. So it wasn't like they were all like, it didn't feel like they like were all like, yo, we want to make this album together. We're going to make a full length, full album. It was kind of like, it seemed like maybe the tracks existed and they were good. And they were like, well, we might as well put out this album and we'll do it through Def Jam because Ghostface is signed to Def Jam. And I believe Method Man should have still been signed to Def Jam at the time. He might have been independent. So I'm like, all I care about is meeting them at the photo shoot because I wanted to get them to sign drawings that I had made of them. And that's all I really was stoked about. And then they were like, well, they don't want to do a photo shoot. I was like, what? They're like, they don't want to do a photo shoot, especially not together. And I was like, okay, do you want to do illustration? And as soon as they were like, just what do you want to do? Basically is what it kind of felt like. And I was like, well, and thank God for Sherry Bryant. She was like, let me do my thing. And she knew that I loved it, I think. And she just was like, she was like, you like Wu-Tang kind of, it felt like it was like, you like Wu-Tang kind of do this pitch. So I was like, what if we did them all as comic book characters? Cause they all had these personas, you know, there was like, Method Man is Johnny Blaze and Ghostface is Iron Man and Raekwon's the chef. So I was like, well, that they're already these characters. Like, what if we just designed them out, like fleshed them out and made them into comic book characters? So I actually did initial drawings, but I did them kind of in the style of like old golden era kind of vector illustrations. And I sent them to them and they were like, nah, we look too old in this. And I think they literally thought that they looked too old in it because the style was so old. So I was like, we have this budget. Can I just hire like someone I love to do it? And they were basically like, yes. And like, and I basically just like convinced Chris Pachalo to do it. And we got the budget together and it ended up being really great. And I got to sit there and like in my brain, make characters for each of these rappers that like had like monikers, but they didn't have like fleshed out like powers and all that stuff. And I literally like a super nerd. Like was like, all right, well, Johnny Blaze obviously will have a blunt in his mouth and he will have fire coming out of his hands. And I was like, Ghostface is kind of like, has this like menacing. He like wore a mask when he first came out in the Wu-Tang Clan. I don't know if you know, like, cause he was like supposedly wanted in like the early videos. So I was like, well, obviously he could be like a Jason figure, but he's also like kind of like this pimp. Like he like kind of like, so like he'll be like this weird pimp. Like if like Frankenstein, like wore a Jason mask and was like a pimp, like just like this weird combination of like royalty, but also like this like hulking kind of wise old character. And then, and like that, the thing is like, you don't have to get that deep, but it's like, I did a lot, like I used to do like want to be a screenwriter and stuff. And like, you learn like the deeper the characters are, the better the work is, even if it doesn't necessarily show that much. So I made these like whole backstories and all this stuff. And then I was like, well, the chef, like that's not very cool. But at the time Dexter was super popular and it was like, well, knives, hello. So what if the chef is like this assassin? And Raekwon was always kind of like smooth, I felt like, and just kind of like, you know, it made sense for him to be kind of like on the low, like you never expect him. And then he comes in and like kills his verse. So that was kind of like the idea behind it. And we made like this whole thing and we actually made a comic book for it that ended up getting leaked and I'm going to put it on my new website, but I wrote the comic book and I was like, I'm not writing the dialogue because I am a white guy from Ohio and I do not feel comfortable with that. So we never, we did all the illustrations and all the pages and all like the beats and the story were written. And then we were going to have someone in the office who was more appropriate culturally write the dialogue. So it didn't seem like a nerdy white guy from Ohio was writing it. And, but then it got killed because we couldn't get clearance from the Wu-Tang people. So, the comic never came out and we never got to the point of writing the dialogue, unfortunately. So now it's all just pictures. You can kind of follow the story though, but it'll be up on my website.
Amazing. Amazing that you got to do that.
The coolest part was because of the budget we created the characters. Yeah. We did the variant covers and I designed them all with custom logos. And then each one was designed exactly like a comic book. And it said like variant cover one of three or whatever. And each one was like completely unique. Back in the day with comic books, they used to do these like inserts. I'm sorry if I'm getting too deep, but
no.
We used to do these like you know, secret kind of like treasure hunting stuff. We even did like these, like a certain edition of them. I think it was like the first 1,000 had like these sketch cards that were placed inside that were like the original sketches, and Ghostface's was the coolest because it didn't have a mask on. So you got to see like what Ghostface would look like without his mask on. And like, you only got those if you were like one of the first 1,000 people to have them. And like, people just loved it. It was so cool because it's just when you work on stuff like that, that it's like, you're the demo. You know what I mean? Like, I just got it and I knew what people would like. And it was like, you know, it was just perfect. People just fucking loved them. Like, there would be people like all over Twitter, people would be like, you know, I bought all 3 and stuff like that. And it just got written up and like, it actually registered on the like album awards. And I had to work on so many projects that I just like had to just get through the day on, that this one was just such a treat. They did like an art show for it that was like all comic book themed, and everyone came out. It was really fun, man.
That is so cool. That is amazing, amazing story. Did you hear from the guys from the Wu-Tang? Did they give any feedback?
So they did do a video shoot, and they all shot separately. So I got to talk to Method Man and Ghost. I didn't get to talk to Raekwon because he came, I think, way later. But Method Man was super cool and signed a drawing that I did of him. It was from that Legendary poster. He was on it. And it was nice. The original drawing that I scanned in for that Legendary poster that got me the job at Def Jam. He signed it, which was really fucking rad, and he was super nice.
That's rad.
I just kind of like sat in the background and listened to him talk. And I think he was like vegan at the time. He might still be, but it was pretty interesting to listen to him. Like, you know, when I grew up, I was like, you were talking about smoking dust, and now you're like vegan? Like, it's just crazy.
Now you're eating kale.
right. I mean, but it makes sense. I mean, he's a millionaire or whatever. But, and then I went to this, and Ghost was shooting way later too. So I got to meet him at this club, and I got there. I was so excited. I thought they were performing. I did not know when hip hop shows started. The club opened at 11. I got there at 11. He showed up, I think, at 3 a.m. So I was just standing in his club waiting to meet Ghostface. Finally, he gets there. His manager walks me through this crowd. It's super packed. And he just was like, he's like, yo, Ghost, this is the dude who did all the artwork. And he was like, yo, that shit is so tight. Like, he was like, it's like awesome or whatever. I mean, and however he actually said it. And I was like, it like meant the world to me, but it was so funny. I like waited for 5 hours just to hear him say, oh yeah, that was really cool. And then he just like walked away. But from what I gathered, everyone was really happy about it. And like the marketing people that get to actually talk to people.
Oh, that's great.
It was just generally pretty well received.
It's amazing. It is an amazing piece of artwork. And once again,
very fun.
Lots of fun, very intensive by the sounds of it, but you've created something that stands the test of time. And from there, and I am jumping a bit, but you mentioned half of Outkast, and you mentioned you were a fan of Outkast. You got to work on Big Boy's album, Sir Lucius Left Foot.
Big Boy's first solo record.
Yes. Back to reality. And once again, it's on your website. And
yeah,
amazing. What was that like?
Sir Lucius Left Foot, comes the son of Chico Dusty. Maybe the longest title. Yes. Definitely the longest title I've ever worked on. It was a complicated thing to fit on an album cover, I'll tell you that.
But you did it. You did it. And you did it with multiple typographies. But the question I had.
Classic young Haldi, too many fonts. But I think it works with a title that long. I tried it with just one font and it looked crazy. It was like way too much of the same thing.
But the question I have is that when you work with someone from our cast, they come with their own style guide, don't they? You sort of... because our cast sort of have that logo badge feel about them. And then that's been incorporated with the Big Boy written in sort of a badge. When you get to work on something like that, is there that history that you have to take into account, or do you try and do something that's separate?
You know, I think like as you can tell, I guess, hopefully by me talking, like I always really treated and still treat hip hop like I am a guest and I am honored to be a part of it. And I do not speak on it like I'm an authority unless I very clearly state that this is just my stupid opinion. And it was hard. That project was hard in that regard because the photo shoot was done before he got signed. It was another scenario where I saw the announcement and I emailed my boss and I was like, oh, please let me work on this. And they let me work on it luckily. And The first single was so sick. Shutterbug. I don't understand. It was even like a decent hit, but I feel like that song should have been huge. It just like wasn't as big as I expected it to be, but I loved it, and I thought the music was so good, and it, you know, and they have so much history, and I was like, am I cheating? Like, I didn't art direct this photo shoot. I kind of just like bullied my way essentially onto like working on the project. And, but they, you know, I don't know not really, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I like didn't, it's not like they like picked out their favorite art director. I just was the in-house guy. And it was like my first Mannion project, and I didn't get to work with Mannion, and it was like hard, you know? And I finally got to do a shoot with him later, and I was like, oh, yo, man, like, I don't know if you know, but we've already collaborated. And he was like, oh, I hate everything any art director's ever done with my photographs. I don't even look at album packages. I was like, that hurts. You're from Cleveland, though, and I'm from Cleveland, and we're both, you know, kind of similar a little. I don't know. But, and there's stuff that, like, I was a kid, so I didn't know. Like, this is still the stage where I feel like I still wasn't, I mean, there's still things I would probably do a little different with the retouching and how I handled the photographs or whatever. But at the end of the day, I think considering what the assignment was, I did a pretty good job. But, you know, it was hard. And, like, I'm blanking on the art director who did the original Outkast logo. Okay, I can't find it. Whatever. But basically, they had this iconic logo, and I didn't want to bite it. But at the same time, it's like, this is tradition, and you want it to feel cohesive. And I wanted to feel like it was, like, part of that language. And I'm going to be honest with you. They picked the photo. They sent it to me. Or no, they didn't pick the photo, but he was like, I want a photo on a white background with purple metallic type. And like, how much can you do with that? And an album name that's like 20 words long. So like, it was kind of like fun because I'm an illustrator at heart. So if you set parameters for me, I kind of work better under that. Like, I'd rather just set the rules and then I'll make it as cool as possible. And I've heard a couple people kind of mention that on your podcast. So yeah. I just, you know, but it was a challenge, I guess, basically. And like, I really tried to kill it with a Mannion photo shoot and like so much history with design. And like, you know, their album covers can like sometimes feel, I mean, they did the comic book album cover first before I did, you know, back with ET Aliens. And that's what I grew up with. And I like learned about that. So I really wanted to carry on that tradition. And I think I did an all right job. I'm pretty happy with it, and he seemed to like it. And it was one of my first, like, really considering it as purple metallic type. I feel like it's pretty measured and not overdone, and I like that aspect of it. And I got a little busier on the inside of it, but you know, it was a fun project. It was a fun project.
Oh, and it was. And I think that anything Outkast, you've got to make it that fun, and you've done that because they have that persona of, you know, clever music, but also they've got, you know, one of the things that you love about who they are is that they have that sort of comic-y feel about them in a way.
I mean, there was pictures from the shoot where he was dressed up like his dad in like a full army suit, like the singles. I used it for one of the singles, and they're like, it was funny, man. It was like that old school Outkast, like when Andre was wearing like a hula skirt or whatever, you know, like it had the good, still had that energy. And I think he's lost a little bit of that, which I hope comes back a little bit in his next work.
Oh, likewise. But look, from there, I wanted to jump to J. Cole, because you have quite a big relationship with J. Cole.
That's human nature, I suppose.
Out here in Australia, where I'm from, or maybe it's because I'm not really in that world, J. Cole isn't a bigger name as he is in America.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. So, I thought you were going to be most excited to talk about him. That's like what most people want to talk to me about. Like, in every aspect of my life. And I get made fun of all the time because when I'm on shoots, he comes up a lot. Like, with these new rappers I work with, they're like, oh, the timer went off. Holly talked about J. Cole.
Because to me, I want to talk about Wu-Clan. Wu-Tang, right. I want to talk about LL Cool J.
Well, you're older. I thought you were like 25.
Bon Jovi, I'm older. And now
you're a little older.
I'm 40, so.
Right.
So, but J. Cole, I didn't know a lot about him, so I went and obviously did a little bit of research. I had no idea he was a first chair violinist for an orchestra. That's pretty impressive. especially from where he was to where he got to.
I think some of his musical things are not all true. That might be. I'm not positive they all are. He was definitely a valedictorian in college, for sure. And he definitely was really sick at basketball. But some of the musical stuff, and even some of the stuff I think I posted when I first met him, I thought he like knew how to play trumpet. So I don't know.
You might want to reframe
that. Or, I mean, it could just be the mythos of J. Cole. I mean, he is.
I think leave it in. I think it's right. The myth.
And he is a genius.
And
man.
I was going to say,
I can't speak highly enough of him.
I was going to say, well, the thing that comes across is obviously the basketball intertwines with his rap persona.
Right.
They're one
and
the same.
Clearly on my albums, at least. That was when he was in his into his college and basketball themed stuff, which was cool. I mean, again, it was like one of those things that was like, it was nice to have something to work with and someone who had an identity that was new and fresh. And like when I took on the project, it was like a small budget project. I had never done a package. And I just, the first one, the come up, which is like not even on my website. Cause I was so young when I did it. But it's I remember listening to it once and being like, all right, cool. I'm working on a rap thing. And then I listened to it again. And I was like, holy shit. This dude is special. It's something special.
Mm.
And like, you know, I'd play it for people and they were like, oh, he sounds like Nas. And I was like, no, like you got to give it more time. Like this dude is something special. It's going to be huge. And I just knew that there was something that was going to happen with him. And like that, so that's why I introduced him. Like I talked about Max earlier, I introduced him to BB Gun and they did all his first early videos. And, you know, that was all after I did the first album. I was like, dude, I just want to be your art guy. Like, let me just do art for you. And I don't even care about the money. I just like love working with you. And I believe in what you're trying to do. And it was like, that was another thing that when I moved on from like doing exclusively music stuff, I was like, how does it get better than this? Like, I went from a dude I used to go to his apartment and like drink Hennessy in like this tiny little room that he lived in. And we would just talk about how he was going to make it and talk about the old days. And he'd give me history about like him like rapping on forums and stuff. And he was like knows hip hop like I do in like a nerdy way. You know what I mean? And we would just talk about like weird underground rappers and stuff. And like I watched him go from that and helped him get to a point where then next thing he signed to Roc Nation. And then I get to work on his first album. Like, that doesn't happen. You know, like how often are you there that early and watch someone grow?
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, fucking cool.
And get to be part of the history. And let's talk about the, cause obviously you did the mixtape, which is great, but then you work on, Cole World, the sideline story, which, you know, once again, you know, basketball, he's sitting in the locker room.
Yeah,
on the front.
Well, the
cover
warm up was actually so, like the craziest story that just came out. That was 10 years ago, which is wild. And we were his manager Ebe posted about it, and I posted about it. But like that photo, like people think it's photoshopped. Like all that snow, we were supposed to do a photo shoot inside of a high school gym. Like that's like for the album. That's what the warm up was supposed to be. Was inside the high school gym, and then Ebe couldn't get us into the gym, and it was snowing outside, freezing cold. Cole had a jacket that he refused to wear in a photo shoot, so he had to borrow the photographer Chad Griffith, my man, like the best dude ever. I love that dude so much. He's like an amazing photographer, and he shot the warm up, and he loaned Cole his sweatshirt to wear in this photo, and we just like got that crazy low angle and. Yeah, like just we're like, fuck it, if we can't get inside. That was like where we were at. It was so DIY and like everything was just like kind of freewheeling. And then the sideline story was kind of like, all right, we have producers now. We're not getting locked out of the gym. Let's get a sick ass huge gym and do like the real photo shoot that we wanted to do before. And you know, one of my biggest regrets, the photographer who shot it is so sick, Leanne Miller, she's amazing, but I do kind of regret not pushing harder for Chad to shoot this because it really was an answer to the warm-up, I feel like. It doesn't matter, but you know, I just got to say that on the record. And Leanne did such a great job, and it has a different feel kind of, but my original concept I found this sick old photo of, I think it was Pippen on the sideline. It might have been Jordan.
Yep.
But it was like, it might have been them next to each other, actually. But it was like from the stands looking down on them. And it was like over his shoulder turning his head. And you could see the whole side of his face. It was like a perfect album cover. And I did it, and it was like, this is the sideline story. It's literally like the guy who's not Jordan sitting on the sideline, like waiting to go in, and like who's kind of slept on, like the underdog story. This is it. And we did those shoots in the locker room, and he just loved them. And it was like one of those things where it's like, no matter what I said, I did 1,000 comps, and it just wasn't, he wasn't agreeing with me. So we ended up nailing this, and the label liked this better because it was straight up forward and he looked a little cuter, I think. And, you know, I think it's a great cover and it's super iconic. It's very symmetrical as a lot of my covers are. But I will say it wasn't exactly what I planned. I had a little bit of a different plan for it. And I have those covers still. Maybe I'll shoot one over to you.
Yeah, send them through.
Teaser.
Yeah, but, Please do. But I love the design aspect. I love the infusion of the basketball. I even love the CD itself, which is of a basketball court, which is just beyond clever.
Right. Thank you. And, yeah. I like that. It's fun. Doing full album packages, man, that was a great time back when you could do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's like you just do a cover and a back cover. unless you get to do a vinyl.
Or a special edition. Yeah, yeah. And then,
the logo on the sideline story, that like the horns and the halo, I think is like a perfect example of like one of those things where he told me it was all his idea. He was like, I want a logo. He's like, he has this line where he says, J. Cole, set of horns and a halo. And he was like, I want a logo that has a set of horns and a halo. And I was like, dude, that is going to look so corny. Like, there's no way that's going to be good. In my head. And I was like, all right, man, I'll try. And out loud, of course. And dude, people have that tattooed on them. It's crazy. Yeah. A lot of people have that tattooed on them. Like, it ended up being this crazy, cool, iconic logo. And it's like, the best shit comes from when an artist has a loose vision and they let the creative director kind of bring it together and make it really cool. And I feel like it's so much easier to talk about something like that because, like, it's not like me. Like, it's like, you know, it was definitely a real collaboration.
Well, you've just spoken about a great segue because you talk about the logo and about it, you know, becoming iconic and on people. And one of the other artists on our series, her name's Amy McCauley. And Amy McCauley is quite well known because she created the first Nas album and created the logo for Nas.
Yes. Yes. And I love that logo so much.
Have the distinction of being able to work on that logo on one of his albums, which
yes,
is
I actually
Life
adapted
Good.
That logo into the first single for Nasty, which was super cool. And that was like another thing of getting to take a piece of history and kind of like adapt it into something modern. And it was pretty awesome.
Well, my question to you about Nas is, how did you talk him out of repeating? Because he loves to repeat that iconic idea that Amy accidentally fell upon, which was the cityscape or a background and then his face overlaid, and he repeats it constantly through his career. I've even spoken to other artists who have worked on it who are like, yeah, I really like what I did, but I really didn't want to copy what Amy had done. But Nas was so insistent on it.
I think that is a blessing, and that was a very unique project I put together. So he was coming out with a project called, he's a gangster rapper. I grew up on Nas. I love Nas. I was team Ether in high school. Like, it was surreal that I got to work on this project. And he's like this badass rapper. I told you, I like people like emoting and being like badass. Like, that's what I loved in rap. And then he's putting out an album called Life is Good. And I was like, what? Like, I get the Life is Good record. Like, I don't get it. And then I got to hear a little bit of the music and I was like, bro, this is like full-on throwback. It's such a good record, and it's so slept on. I feel like it's like so awesome. And like, weirdly, I think the cover actually got a little more love than the album itself. I heard the music, and it sounded like a throwback, and I was like kind of the opposite. I was like, fine, then let's just like make this hip-hop as hell. And like, he did Hip-Hop is Dead. Like, this is going to be the like Hip-Hop is Alive and Hip-Hop is Sick, and we're going to do this whole shoot that like cherishes hip-hop. So I got like an old subway car that's like in the LES, like a prop one. And I got, we were going to go to, 5 Points with all the graffiti. And we were going to go to Queensbridge and get the iconic bridge shot and all these like super hip hoppy things. And like, as the shoot approached, he just cut And I was working with Matthew Salik, who's like the coolest dude, such a good photographer, such an awesome dude. And he had, I think, maybe shot some old Nas stuff back in the day. And he has this ability to shoot like really candid and kind of clear kind of images that almost feel more photojournalistic, I feel like. And that's kind of what I was sold him on. And I pitched all these photographers who were like either looked like really old school, like kind of had like an old school feel. And like, I really wanted it to be like kind of like a throwback-ish kind of vibe. And it just ended up being, which is funny because it just ended up being so different. And then I had this old barber shop. I wanted to do like a sick like barbershop shot. And literally as the shoot approaches, he's like, we're cutting the barbershop. Or the man, you know, the marketing people are like, we're cutting the barbershop. We're cutting the subway. We're cutting this. And then next thing I know, literally the only thing we have left is a hotel. And I'm like, what? Like, what are we going to do? Like, I was like, well, there's a couple looks in there and there's like the rooftop shot of Queens. I was like, I guess it's going to be another Queens bridge in the background with a picture of him. And we shot some sick pictures up there. But the night before I met with him in his car and he was like, we're going to do, and I think he had the same conversation with Matt. He was like, I'm going to do a picture with the dress. And everyone hadn't heard about how Khalees had stolen all the stuff out of his apartment. He had just gotten divorced and his wife had taken everything out of his apartment and left just the green dress. And I was like, well, that's way better than anything that I had come up with. And my stupid, nerdy hip hop, like I made this like whole hip hop, like porn celebration shoot. And instead I was like, oh, this is everything I love. It's so emotional. And it's like, it was like all the stuff I loved about the rock music I listened to at the time, but it got to come through in this through this hardcore, like, you know, rapper who had like spoke for the streets. And it was so cool and so much more important and so different. And it was so exciting. And I was just like, all right, great. Well, then we'll figure out the rest of the shoot. I'm not worried about it. And that's the shot that we need to get. And we scouted around, me and Matt, and we kind of figured it out. And of course, I wanted it to be, I found this cool little bench lobby thing where it's nice and clean and symmetrical, as we can tell. I love
very symmetrical. Yes.
and literally we were like, all right, this is where it's got to be. It's what makes the most sense. And he just sat down and he brought out the dress and everything kind of got quiet. And because it was like awkward, man. I mean, it's crazy. You know, it's such a personal thing and it's a story that you read about.
Yeah,
in
very
the news
fresh.
And you don't think about how, like, why you don't think about like how real it is until you see a dude holding his ex-wife's wedding dress that she like left him with. And like, he sat down, he had that glass of champagne. Like, it was such a perfect moment. And everything got quiet and everything got kind of still. And I watched and just stood back and it was all Salik used. And he was just taking the pictures and really it was all Nas. And he just got into that moment. And like, that was the look. That face right there was just like, it was so real. I can't even describe it. Like, you know, when you're like, see something too emotional and you get that like feeling in your gut, like it was like uncomfortable kind of.
Yes.
That's what it felt like. And it was just like, he was just on the roof in a fur jacket, like with a bottle of champagne, like life is good. And then how great is the dichotomy of the title Life is Good with that picture of this bulletproof man who's like a hero to so many people and a legend and is showing that kind of like honesty and like putting his heart out there. It was just so awesome. I'm so proud to be a part of that. And it's a classic, man. That to me is like, that's a classic. And it was all Nas and all Matt. And I just got to kind of help facilitate it and be there.
And
I did do that really cool wedding type.
I was going to say the wedding type and the wedding feel is just insane. And even the photo of the, you know, the cake topper of the man and the woman.
Just a little on the nose, just, but why not?
Oh, it comes out so perfectly. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that has become, like you said, very iconic. And now I know the story behind it and now everyone else does. And a lot of people internet probably did know the story. I didn't. It makes it so much more perfect.
It's just crazy.
Crazy is what this entire episode has been. Rihanna to Nas, J. Cole to Big Boy, and then the Woo Massacre being the icing on the cake. Next episode, we jump into Bon Jovi, Jay-Z, and Kanye, as well as Common. Alex has had such an incredible career and really created imagery that is out of the box. Catch you next time on the next episode of Undercovers.
Vibe Machine.